What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Raising Kings. We just in here having fun before we get rolling, and the fun has intruded the show. And so here we are. I'm excited today, even though she's saying I don't look like it, because I am tired. She's told me I got to get my energy up, so I'm gonna push through it. But I'm excited today. One of the most, and she's going to hate me for saying this, one of the most brilliant minds that I know, one of the most creative people I know, one of the greatest marketers, one of the greatest people I know, that many of my ideas that I get the opportunity to create and do, I run by her first so she can tell me it's dumb, it's stupid, or go for this one. But I want y'all to welcome to the stage, to the show. Tell them your name. Introduce yourself.
You don't know my name?
Yeah, but I don't want to jack it up for chic.
I know it. You don't know my name?
Yeah, I know it, but it's for chic.
My name is for chic Burton. Thank you very much for your incredibly thoughtful.
Thank you.
And thank you. You know, wonderful accolades that I do not deserve.
You do deserve them, because let me tell y'all something. This book,
here we go.
Everybody listen. This book was made possible by for chic.
No.
I just call her chic.
No. That's true, you do.
Right. So listen, everything outside of the words that I wrote, her and her company did this. And so I just want to tell the people, first of all, go get the book, because I say this every show.
Absolutely. Do that.
Do that. But then you can also see the incredible work that her and her company did to help me produce this. So thank you for helping me get my thoughts onto paper. And in such an incredible design and art and color and all of that.
Thank it was so our much. Pleasure. It was our blast. Pleasure. You're a great client.
Thank you. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Most days.
Most days.
Most days.
Hey, you know, we work through the, as we do now, we work through the, you know, there's always some hitches. And I have to be open to the criticism that I receive when you say, this is not a good idea, B.
That's it's okay. What?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's go. So for chic, tell the people the story that I already know. That's okay. Why you're here. So, you know, as you know, Raising Kings is a podcast for single moms, especially those that are raising boys. And you have boys. You mm-hmm. have been a single mom mm-hmm. and about to be married mm-hmm. in a few months. And so to a great mm-hmm. guy, Carlton.
Yes.
What's up,
shout
Carlton?
Shout out.
Yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
Shout and out, so, boom.
I want you to go back, you know, I call it the bus story, like go back to the bus story.
So I'm going to take it a little bit before the bus story. Okay. So I've been a single mom for most of my adult life, and I got married very young, and my kid's father had a drug and alcohol problem. And when I decided to leave that marriage, it was incredibly difficult to me because I didn't want to be a single mom. Mm-hmm. And I remember my first lady at church telling me to stay. And her justification for me staying was, you don't want to be a single mother, do you?
Oh, wow.
And I was like, ooh, you're right. I don't know if I want to do that. So I'm going to just, you know, stick this out. But after years of rehab and, you know, busting into trap houses and everything that comes with dealing with someone with addiction, I decided to leave. And I remember the moment that I decided to leave, I was standing in a Giant Eagle parking lot, and I had two children that were very young that were both in car seats. And then my older son was standing next to me, and I was about to go grocery shopping, and I was holding these two car seats, and I'm like, how am I going grocery shop? Like, I understood the idea of being a single mother, mm-hmm. but the practicality of doing simple things such as grocery shopping was really like, I was about to call it quits right then and be like, you know what, let's work this out, because just, I can't do simple stuff. Like, how am I gonna survive? And I called a friend of mine who had the same number of children that I had, who was also a single mom. And I said, hey, how do you grocery shop? And she's like, oh, put the one car seat on the top portion where they would normally sit, put the other car seat in the basket, and then just have Cameron, you know, walk alongside you. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, okay. Okay, so I can do this. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And in that moment, I realized that I needed a village, that I could not do this by myself, and I needed to create a village around me that could rally support around me, my kids, and that I could rally support around them too. And so I formulated a nonprofit called From Lemons to Lemonade that was a single mom support group. And we would meet in each other's homes. Our kids would play together. We would cook together. And we would just commiserate about everything that happened in our lives. And it was great. And I loved it. And I decided that I wanted to be able to do that type of work full time. So I went back to school. And I went back to school like full time and decided to get on public assistance for 18 months. I had what was called For Sheik's Plan of Action, a whole thing. I was going to get on public assistance. I was going to thug it out for 18 months, do what I needed to do to graduate. And then I was going to run my nonprofit full time. During that time, I could not afford gas. So I had a big SUV that was a gas guzzler, and I could not afford gas. So what I would do is I would park in my kids' daycare, and I would take the bus back and forth to school every day because the bus was free for students. So I would park there and take the bus back and forth. During the time I was on the bus, I would tweet inspirational messages to other single mothers like, you are your child's first teacher. You can do it. You know, you can, you know, stay encouraged, read to your kids every day, all of the things. And it caught the attention of the former editor at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, Margaret Bernstein. Mm-hmm. She sent me a DM on Twitter and she said, I feel like there's a story here. And I said, the only story is that I am everything that you don't want to be in life. Like, there's no story here. I'm a struggling single mom. There's really no story. She's like, I feel like there's a story here. And so she decided that she was going to send a photographer to my school and she was going to interview me. And she did. And that next Sunday, I was on the front page. Wow. And the title, the headline was Prolific Tweeter Finds Support with Single Mothers Online. And I couldn't afford to buy the paper that I was on the front page of.
Wow.
I remember I was scrambling in the car trying to find coins to, you know, dig up to afford to pay for the paper. And I couldn't. So I just sat in the convenience store and just read it. And she got such a big response that she ended up writing a subsequent article that next week because so many people were reaching out to her. One of the people that reached out to her is Rebecca Dorman. She's the former executive director of Invest in Children, who reached out to her and said, hey, who is this young lady? She's able to reach the exact demographic that we've been trying to reach online for so many years. Can we meet with her? And so I said, yes. I came out. I met with her and her team. They told me what they were trying to do. And I said, well, you know, this is all you need to do. And she said, well, can you do it? And I'm like, sure. And that was my first contract. Wow. Helped me grow up Cuyahoga County. I charged $384 a month to run their social media.
Wow.
And they actually, I just expired their contract last month. Actually, no. Yeah, last month, March. They've been my client ever since then, over a decade. Really? And so, yeah, it was, you know, it was one of those things where God uses your situation and all you need to do is like, you know, just be available to him. Mm-hmm. So whatever he want, wherever he wants you to move, you just move. And it was just one of those things where there were these sequence of events that occurred that led me to creating Co-Creative. And that whole marketing agency was built on the bus from me just tweeting inspirational messages.
This is a result of Co-Creative. I mean, I'm playing, but I'm serious, man. Like, I mean, that's a series of events that y'all helped me, you know, get my first book out. So if it wouldn't have been for the bus, who knows?
I know. We became a multi-million dollar agency that, you know, it was bigger than I could have ever dreamed.
Yeah. So after the article, was that your first push into marketing?
Yeah. I never considered it.
So even with the tweeting, you was just tweeting.
Mm-hmm. I was literally just talking to other single moms online.
Wow.
I wasn't thinking from a business perspective at all. You know, I had my nonprofit, but I wasn't like marketing it. I wasn't doing anything. But I think that's where the story is, the authenticity of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you are operating in your gifting and you are authentic in your gifting and you're not putting on for anyone, people can see that and they want to be a part of it. And that's what's truly attractive to people. They want to be a part of something they feel that you are walking in that's authentic.
So what was like that first? So you get that first contract. Was that like the switch that went off? Like, I got something here. Like, really?
They were my only client for a really long time.
Really?
And they ended up offering me a full-time position.
Okay.
That I couldn't refuse because, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm like, sure. So I ended up working for them full time and then still doing stuff on the side for their other partner agency. And it wasn't until I think looking back, the moment for me that I felt like this is credible, this is something I can actually do, I have something here, was when Case Western Reserve published a study on the marketing strategy that I was using for nonprofits. So essentially, the strategy that I used was able to be proved as evidence-based because I was able to reach clients for these nonprofits and government agencies in between home visits, in between appointments, in between all of these things. And because I was able to reach them in between all of those things, all of those touch points that they had, people stayed in programming longer. So for instance, Help Me Grow is a home visiting agency. And using the marketing method that I use for them, Case was able to prove that if they engaged with me online in between their home visits, they stayed with Help Me Grow longer, which in turn has better outcomes for those families. They are able to connect with more resources, infant mortality decreases, breastfeeding rates increase, all of these things. And because they were able to prove that, then my method was determined to be evidence-based. And so for me, I'm like, okay, so if I'm evidence-based and I'm only marketing this with Help Me Grow, what would happen if I expanded to other agencies? And so I went in my supervisor's office and gave my 2-week notice. And I said, hey, Tom, here's my 2 weeks. I would like the opportunity to wing you as a client.
Really? And?
What was he going to say? Wow. Like, really, what was he going to say?
That's so dope.
Yeah. So he was, you know, he was upset a little bit, but, you know, what was it going to be? So
he had a problem and used the solution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I, you know, went and got other clients, got other contracts, and built my agency based on my ability to provide this evidence-based strategy of marketing that's particularly attractive to nonprofits and government agencies.
That's extremely dope.
Thank you.
Yeah. I don't think I knew that part of the story.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know about Tom.
Yeah. Yeah, Tom.
Yeah. So at what point was Co-Creative born in?
So, initially, it wasn't called Co-Creative.
Okay.
I hate telling this story because it makes me seem like I'm a shark. And people call me that, and I'm not. So, when I tell this story, I want you to understand.
So, we can't be judgmental. Right?
That do not judge me.
Okay,
guys. Don't judge me. America.
America, because America's
gonna hear this. Don't judge me.
Okay.
Yes. So
we here now. So
all right.
We here now.
So I knew I wasn't good at everything. I'm very hyper aware of what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. So when you're doing social media and when you're doing marketing, you can't do everything. Mm. You have to hire your weakness. And so my weakness was photography. My weakness was graphic design. Those are things that I'm like, damn, I'm not really good at. I'm decent, but I'm not good at.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, who's the best? Who is the best at, first I started with photography. Who is the best at photography? And I came across Cameron Khan. And I said, yo, Cam. In my head, I already knew I wanted her. But I needed an in. I needed some way to figure out what her weakness was that I would be able to
support for her.
Yes.
Yep.
So I said, hey, can we do an event together? And she's like, you know, what type of event? So we sit down, we talk about it. We decide to do this event called Marketing and Mimosas, where we bring in young professional women, and she provides professional headshots. I provide marketing expertise. We collab on this event, and I'm like, okay, I see what her weakness is. Why? What is that face?
Because I remember that. I'm not telling my story about that, but I...
Oh, I know. Anyway.
Anyway.
Anyway. So... Let's move on.
Leave all this stuff in, man. This is hilarious. Yeah, as soon as you said that, I was like,
Okay. It's all coming together.
Yep.
So we do marketing and mimosa together. And immediately I'm like, yo, Cam, this is something I can do for you. And I need you to do this. And if we combine efforts, then we could do something real, real dope. Mm. And so she's like, okay, I'm open to it. And so we, you know, start talking and figuring out what it would take for us to do a company together. She and I vibe, like, we click immediately.
Okay.
And so I'm like, that's perfect because I need somebody who allows me to be me.
Mm.
And she can do what she needs to do. And she's literally anyone who knows Cameron Khan, Google her.
Yeah.
She is
extremely dope.
Legit the best.
Yeah.
There is nobody, and I don't care what anybody says, y'all can coin this, y'all can cut it up and play it wherever. She is literally the best photographer in Northeast Ohio, period. And because she's the best, then my clients got the best photos.
Yeah.
So I was able to say, okay, when you work with me, not only are you going to get the best marketing strategy, but you're also going to get the best photography, which was really, you know, attractive to people, especially at the time. But there was one piece that we were missing. So I participated in, like, I came across on Instagram, this chick named Brittany had posted this project called the Marcus Graham Project. Marcus Graham Project is an opportunity for sports marketers all over the country to come together for 3 days to work on a project with big name brands in an intense. Think of, you remember Meet the Band?
Mm-hmm.
Think of Meet the Band for 3 days.
Okay.
So we spend 24 hours a day working on a real project for top national brands, international brands, actually. So I applied to be a part of the cohort that was coming to Cleveland, this Marcus Graham Project. Brittany said that she knew she had an in, and she knew this guy, and he said, if you recommend somebody, I'll push them through. I got in the day before everything closed, so he pushed me through, and I was able to participate in this humongous, like, cohort. They got creatives from LA, New York, Texas, everywhere. All of these incredibly dope artists that are designers, literal artists that are coming together. And our project was the co-branding of Goodyear and the Cleveland Cavs. At the time, they were They had just decided that they were going to join together as a co-branding, and we were supposed to create some activations throughout the city that would introduce this collaborative co-branding to the city. Because I know my weakness, I was like, there's no way I can compete with anybody in here. Mm-hmm. I can't, I don't know anything that they're talking about. I'm not that creative. Like, I'm good with the marketing piece, but I can't create something from scratch. Like, these people are coming up with the most ridiculously amazing ideas. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting in this room like, where am I? Right. Like, what is happening? And so I immediately knew, all right, Frasheek, you're never going to win. So you need to get the person who does win. Whoever is in the room that's the best, you're going to use these 3 days to get that person. So I felt like it was like I was dating, like I was a dude. And I was like, all right, who's the dopest chick in the room? That's who I got to take home. So
take them down.
Got to figure out how I'm going to do it. So all of the artists, they were cool. They were good. They were dope. But at the end of the 3 days, I didn't have my person. Mm-hmm. And then immediately I realized who the person was. And it was the person running the cohort in Cleveland, which was Jason Garrett. And I was like,
that's him.
That's him. So we had our, at the end of the 3 days, we were introducing it to the Cavs executives down at Rocket Mortgage. And we were in one of the suites. And if Jason tells the story, he says, I slid up to him and was like, so what you about to do after this? I'm like, Jason, I did not say that. He's like, I swear, that's how you... I'm like, that's not what I said. I was saying, what are you doing, like, as far as, you know, marketing? Like, what are you doing? Like, are you about to own an agency? Like, what are you...
Said, you could have said what he said you said, but you meant it that way, and he heard it. Like, you whatever. Probably did say that. I'm going with Jason on this one.
Whatever, whatever. Yeah. I went up to him, and I said... You
what
know.
You doing after this?
Anyway, he was like, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, doing an agency or whatever. I'm not really sure. You know, I'm kind of trying to figure some things out. And I said, okay, can you meet with me and Cameron this week at our new office? And he was like, yeah, sure. So he comes, and it was like a Wednesday. He comes to the office, and I said, Jason, I know you plan to do your own thing, but until you do, can you come and join us? Because we need you. And he was like, you know, what would that look like? And I was like, pretty much this would be your office. You bring your clients here. We're all bringing our clients here. And we just about to be dope. The three of us. Mm-hmm. And that's how Co-Creative was born.
That's wild. Thanks, Jason.
I know. And he's literally, anybody can argue me down. It don't matter. Jason is quite literally the best designer in the country.
Yeah, he did my book.
I know he did.
He did.
He's literally the best. And he has won so many awards and has done so much dope stuff. Like, he is legitimately the best.
Yeah. And he a good guy.
He is.
While he was designing my book, he texted me one day and was like, hey, man, I ain't mean to be reading your book, but I was reading the book. He was like, this is so necessary and it's extremely dope. So that was pretty cool. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. For him to, you know, to even say that. That was
right. I thought that was exactly. Cool.
So in all that, you know, this is Raising Kings. Like, in all of this great business journeying you doing, how are you balancing all this great stuff with raising the kids?
I'm not. So I suck at everything at different times. Mm. So if I'm doing really good professionally, a lot of times my personal life is in shambles. If I'm doing really good personally, a lot of times my professional life is in shambles. And I've realized that's okay. And I made peace with that. The reality is that we have to do whatever is necessary in that season. So sometimes it's necessary for me to grind out, and I may need to miss a game, and I may not be there when you go to sleep. I may not be able to be at everything because I have to grind out in this season. And then there's other seasons where you need me to be present more than I need to be at this event, more than I need to be in this meeting. And that's okay too. I've told my kids, they are older now. So that little boy who was following me on the at the grocery cart is 21. Mm-hmm. And those two kids that were in the car seats are 16 and 17. And I've told all three of them, it is my prayer that they do very well in school so that they can go to college and graduate and get an amazing job with great health insurance so that they can go to therapy and deal with all of the things that they feel like I should have done better. Because what I'm not going to do is feel guilty about it.
Wow.
I'm not going to live in that. I've seen where women have, and I just won't. I did the absolute best that I could, and they got a front row seat to a lot of my accomplishments and a lot of my mistakes. And I felt like it was important for them to see both. Mm.
So do you think a lot of women deal with the guilt of, that's very self-aware. Like, so do you think a lot of women maybe aren't self-aware or honest enough with themselves to say what you just said?
Yeah, and I think a lot of times we have the unfair belief that we can do everything and be everything that they need us to be and be perfect.
Yeah.
And I think that in a lot of ways that does them a great disservice. They have to be able to navigate life.
Yeah.
More than anything, I want them to be mentally strong and spiritually strong more than I want them to be anything else, because this life, this world will eat them up.
Yeah.
And I don't want weak-minded adults out here navigating college and navigating their first jobs and, you know, all of the things. I just don't.
How did you decipher or what told you this is the season to grind or this is the season to be more present as a parent?
So it's a mixture, I would say, of the Holy Spirit, just making sure that I'm connected at all times to where he wants me to go. Like, I don't, and I know that probably sounds a little cliche, but quite honestly, there were a lot of moments throughout my life where I didn't know what to do. And I had to tap in and said, you know, all right, God, this is where we are right now. I don't know what exactly is going on.
Yeah.
So tell me where I need to be. And at times he would say, you need to be home. And at times he would say, they're all right. You need to be here because in the long run, it's going to pay off. Did I know that my son was going to go to Berkeley and have me spend $55,000 in one year on tuition? No.
Right.
But had I not grinded out the way that I did, it wouldn't have been possible for him.
Yeah. So like this is taking like a raising kids / entrepreneurship journey turn. I know a lot of women, a lot of mothers have entrepreneurial ideas and creative things. So in the same way, when you were grinding tough, it was less attention maybe, or maybe whatever the word is on the kids end. How did that look in the business side when there was less attention on business and more attention on family?
So because I had a team, it made it easier.
Okay.
So I don't like doing things by myself. I feel like when you are just got your hand in, we have talked about this a million times. When you have your hand in every single thing of your business, your business is limited based on your capacity. So how you feel that day, If you get COVID, as we see, you know, like stuff right. happens.
Right.
Life happens. People die. People get sick. People get married. All kinds of things happen. And when you are the only person running your business, then it's going to be limited based on your own capacity. But because I had a team, then I was able to allocate a lot of time and resources toward them that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to do if it was just me.
Yeah. Okay. So the part that you left out that you didn't talk about, one mm-hmm. of your talents, was hosting events. You know where I'm headed.
I don't.
No, oh, you do.
Oh. How we met?
Nah. When you hosted my event.
Oh.
Cocktails and Conversations.
Yes. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we got to.
Yes.
So I don't even know what the introduction to that is. So we had this event, Cocktails uh-huh. and Conversations. Was the theme Single Mothers that mm-hmm. day? Okay. The yep. theme was Single Moms.
It sure was.
Yeah. Yeah. That wasn't on tape. Yeah.
Can I just say, there is a young man that you might know, and America might knows, named Bishop Maceo Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Who believes that?
Oh my God!
Oh. And I just had to call him out because we spent considerable time discussing his definition of what single mothers actually are and what they are not. And I just, every opportunity I get, I call him out on that and say, yo, a single mother is a woman whose marital status is single, and she's a mother. She doesn't have to not be in relationship.
He gonna kill you.
I know he is. He's gonna be in the comment section like.
Hey, I wish I had that thing where I could call him and everybody could hear.
Right, exactly.
I didn't even think about that. I forgot that he was one of the instigators
yep.
of that conversation.
Yep, he was. And so it was funny, though. It was a lot of people, a lot of guys agreed with him. And I found that very interesting. I almost believe that men consider it a badge of honor to be a single mom, as though we walk around with this badge that says, I'm a single mother, and, you know, I'm somehow better or greater. Then
so I'm not gonna speak on anybody that's not present.
Yep.
And what their definition is.
Yep.
Because I don't want my name in the comments because it's my show and I want my show to like keep going. So, so give context to that evening.
Uh-huh.
You know, just the conversation and what your because the conversation became one the definition of single mothers.
It started that way because I was intentional of starting it that way so that we can lay the foundation for how the rest of the conversation will go. That if we could at least come to an understanding of what we mean when we say single mom, then every other topic that we discuss will be through that framework.
Yeah.
And so, but we couldn't get to an understanding of what single mom was and what it wasn't.
We could not. A great conversation. It turned out to a great night.
It was great.
It did not move. Didn't have
People
much traction.
Very passionate. Let me switch it on you and ask you this question.
Oh, Lord.
Why do you think that men have such a huge issue with women who describe themselves as single mothers yet are in a relationship with their kid's father?
Yet, say the last part again.
Are in a relationship with or without their kid's father. Just in a relationship.
So I think that's different. Like, so I don't think I hear a woman in a relationship with her kid's father refer to herself as a single mother. Because I feel like, just in theory, they probably feel like we're headed to the finish line, which is marriage.
Interesting.
I'm just throwing that out there. Yeah. I am not right or wrong about anything I say.
I just find that interesting that you say that.
I don't like how that sounded.
No, and let me say this, and a lot of women would agree with you.
Okay, thank you. however, being in the room that night and hearing the various definitions that were given, especially on the male side, that your singleness has nothing to do with your
marital status.
Your marital status has nothing to do with whether you have children or not. So you're a mother. Nobody walks around saying, I'm a married mother. And I'm going to stop there.
So that, and that was the thing for me. Because it's such a convoluted type of definition, there's a lot of nuances that come with, quote unquote, being single and a mom and being a single mom. Definitely, all of that makes up and embodies the essence of being a single mom. Even having that type of conversation are not conversations that you would have if you were married.
Right.
Like, there is no nuance. Either you're married or you're not married. Right. Like, there's no nothing. But when it comes to being a single mom, one day you could be a single mom and the next day you're not because you're in a relationship. And then if y'all break up, then you're a single mom. But then if he pay child support, then you're not. And that was a lot of the conversation. They're like, well, if he pay child support, then you're not a single mom. And I was like, interesting. What if he missed a payment? Am I a single mom then? Like, what is happening? Like, I think there's this energy that comes with that, what is considered to be a badge of honor. And there's like, you don't deserve that title of being a single mom if you are in my, you know, in this list of things.
So then my question about the badge of honor piece is, are there women who use it as a badge of honor? Because I often see headlines that say single mom graduates, whatever, whatever, or single mom overcomes whatever challenge and hurdle. It's a headline.
Yeah.
Isn't that a badge of honor?
No, I don't think anybody wants to be a single mom, but I think the conversations that women, okay, so let me give you an example. First of all, I believe I'm a single mom. And I know that was a thing during that night.
Okay.
Because they were like, whoa, what you mean? I'm like, I'm not married. And,
I was about to say, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was.
Yes.
Okay.
Audience, I have a little bitty baby. So I had a baby. And
I wasn't talking about that part. I was talking about
Carlton?
Yeah.
I'm about to get there.
Okay, my bad.
So we have a little bitty baby. So Carlton and I have a child. He was born in 2023. And Carlton and I are together. We, as you said, are engaged. We are set to be married on July 19th. What's the date today?
April 10th.
It is April 10th. It is not July 19th. My marital status is single. Kendrick is my baby. I'm his mom. Therefore, I am a single mom. Would Carlton agree? Perhaps not.
I should have invited him. I should have called him. I don't know why I didn't think of that.
When we show him this, then he'll be having all kind of thoughts and ideas. And who knows if I'm going to be, you know, a single mom on July 9th. No, I'm just kidding. But no, and they were up in arms about me describing myself that way. Because to me, anything can happen in a drop of a hat. The conversations that I've had with Carlton about health insurance, about life insurance, about protecting me and his son, those are not conversations that you have to have with somebody who's you're married to, because those protections already exist. But because we're single, then tax, you know, return, all of those things, those are all conversations that people who are marry, do not have to have. I know because I was married. So I know what the difference is. I know how they exist. And, you know, being a single mom is just being single.
Okay.
And my mom.
So then, I ain't never scratched my eyes this much in the conversation. So
Okay.
So the next level to that conversation that we had then was the concept of fatherless homes.
Yes.
Define that.
So I believe that all the statistics and all of the, you know, stuff that people have, experiences and all the things that they share related to children who were raised in quote unquote single mom's home, single mom homes, are not simply because these moms are single, but because these fathers have left. Mm-hmm. And there is a negativity, there is a negative experience that happens to children and mothers when fathers leave the home. And those are the statistics that people quite often are talking about. But instead, the narrative becomes, you know, boys who are raised in single mom homes are, quote, you know, 60% more likely to end up in jail. Girls who were raised in single mom homes are more likely to, you know, not graduate from high school or end up as a single mother herself. All of these type of statistics exist, not because of the single mom, but because of the father who left. And the reason I believe that to be true is because a single mom stayed. By nature of it being a single mom home, it means that she's there and these children are there and she's raising them probably alone. And if she's not raising them alone and he does exist in the home, then those statistics that they're talking about greatly decrease. Mm-hmm. But a lot of those types of narratives and angles that people come up with are purely based on fathers who have left the home. And we, instead of allocating the blame toward them, we allocate it toward these moms as though they're not doing a good job, they're not trying hard enough, or they were being reckless in their love life, or they, you know, didn't do this and didn't do that. But instead, it needs to be reallocated toward these fathers who left.
So how do we do that?
Hold them responsible and start talking about the narrative. I do believe that communication and words mean a lot, especially now in 2025. We see through the administration that we exist under in this political climate, how important it is to make sure that words are written down. Not to get into the weeds, but President Trump has done an incredible job at angling a lot of things toward his way that are just not true. But he says them out loud. They're written down. They're put into papers. They're put on publications. They're written all over the media. And whether they're true or not, they're written in history. And people begin to believe certain things just by nature of reading them. The same can be true for a lot of things. When we look at the historical context of the single mom, a lot of it existed out of the Reagan administration during the 80s. So President Ronald Reagan came out with this, coined this term, the welfare queen. And when he coined this term, the welfare queen, he was talking about public assistance. And public assistance was never intended for Black women. It was intended for widows, which were white women at the time after World War II. But when they started to see that Black women were getting on public assistance more and more, then he decided that he was going to create this narrative of this welfare queen. And it had a lot of like cartoonish type of publications in the newspaper. You would see these Black women that were more often overweight, had lots of kids. They were sitting around being lazy. And he would put a crown on their head and coin them as welfare queens who were living off the system. Those didn't exist. But we were made to believe that they did. And so for decades after that administration released that, you found that Black women were trying their best to combat that narrative that was given to them in the 80s, that they were irresponsible, that they were lazy, and that they just lived off of public assistance. And people began to believe it. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about the power behind media and advertisement and communications and, you know, all of those strategies that people are doing right now in social media, it's become much more important for us to angle toward fathers by holding them responsible for these homes rather than the single mothers. She's doing what she needs to do. She stayed, she's raising these kids, she's doing her best, she's working, she's praying with them, she's going to church with them, she's feeding them, she's doing whatever she's doing. And these fathers need to be held responsible for all of those statistics that they're holding these moms responsible for. And that can be done through the media, through communication, through podcasts like this.
Is it just a Black thing?
Nah. Mm-mm. I think it, so again, that's a whole narrative that's mm-hmm. being pushed that this is, you know, there's this, you know, race issue that yeah. exists with Black women, that they are, you know, more single. No, there's a lot of white women that are single mothers, either raising their children on their own or have remarried, but were raising their children on their own for a period of time. So I don't think it's a race issue, but I will say that the narrative that exists of the single mom being this negative connotation becomes a Black issue. That is a race issue. That is us being viewed as being irresponsible and us being viewed as being reckless instead of what it is.
So in a male-dominated society, it's our job as men to hold the men that have made these decisions to ultimately create broken homes.
Mm-hmm.
What do we say to them?
I don't know. I'm not a guy. Mm. And I'm not even going to pretend like I know, you know, what y'all listen to. But I do know that men have pride. The male species is incredibly prideful.
Mm-hmm.
And if he can make it about her, he will. Just like Adam did in a garden.
I'm not touching that.
You stepped on that real quick. Yeah. You was like, absolutely not.
Nah.
But yeah, just like Adam did in the garden, made it about Eve, that woman you gave me. They're very prideful. And if they can blame shift, they will. And so if I would imagine, again, I'm not a guy, so I don't know. But if narratives consistently were being pushed about fatherless homes as opposed to single mom homes, and he viewed his children's home as a fatherless home instead mm-hmm. of just Keisha's home, as, you know, a fatherless home instead of just Tanisha's house, I think it would sting.
I never even heard the perspective till you mentioned it that night. I was like, oh, that's kind of accurate.
Yeah.
And even in my work at Dreams Academy, I can count on two hands in 9 years how many dads I've met.
Oh, wow.
Yep. I've met more, and definitely I've met more dads who were like, because, so I'll tell you this, I think I mentioned this in one of the other episodes. I've gotten calls from dads who said, I don't understand why my kid is in your program.
Yes.
Because I'm present, because I'm ABC. And I was like, hey man, somebody got on my website and filled out the application. I don't even know y'all.
Yeah.
So you gotta take that up with, you know, whoever. I said, but you are more than welcome to show up. Like, come with your son. And that didn't happen. But even in, you know, just in the conversations and the communications I get from mothers, a lot of it is dad's not around.
Yeah.
And so we need y'all.
And then we, you know, blame her through the media and through these studies and say, it's the single moms raising the boys. That's why he's in jail. Because these moms, it's, you know, they're raising these girls and she got four kids and blah, blah, blah. Well, what about the niggas? Like, I'm sorry, y'all.
we here now.
But yeah, like, place the blame where it's, she's doing it. Yeah. She's taking them to dreams. Whatever more do you want from her? She's trying to get help. She's making every effort. So why does it need to be about her rather than placing the blame in the person who left and saying, hey, whatever happens with this young man isn't just solely on her. It's also due to the fact that the dad left the home.
I saw something the other day that said, if you have friends in your circle that don't take care of their kids, you are part of the problem.
Mm. What do you think about that?
Ooh, that's tough. That's real tough.
Why is it tough?
Because at 44 now, I've had friends who have been my friends since teenage, early 20s,
mm-hmm.
where we not even thinking about stuff like that.
What do you mean?
So for me, I didn't even know to. I came from a two-parent home, so I'm not thinking about the ramifications of what you're not doing. Mm. I'm not yet in purpose work where I am now, mm-hmm. where I'm working with kids who have the issues that they have because mm-hmm. somebody wasn't at home. So accountability is definitely at the forefront of that. Do you unfriend a friend because they don't take care of their kids?
Are you asking me that?
No, it's
rhetorical.
Yeah, it's rhetorical.
I think, you know.
That's why I said it's tough. If I'd have known you 20 years and you ain't took care of your kids for 20 years.
Do you think it's nuanced?
Yes, I think it's very nuanced.
How? I've always wondered that. A world doesn't exist.
Well,
where Frasheek doesn't take care of her kids.
Well, so
a world would never exist.
Right. So what I can say for my circle of my closest friend now, there's nobody in there that does not take care of their kids.
Yes. But for those that you think of when I said that it's nuanced, whoever came to your mind.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what to say at this point. And I also know that there is trauma behind. Because at 19, 20, I don't even know what trauma is.
Yeah, of course.
So looking at it now, no excuses as to why those persons may not have done so. But a lot of trauma in the background, a lot of miscommunication in the background, a lot of things that point to their reasoning for why they didn't. I can't speak to.
Give me three reasons why a guy wouldn't.
Three reasons why a guy
would not take care of his children.
Three reasons why a guy would not take care of kids. Do you want the? I can give you the three reasons that I've heard them say.
That you believe.
Relationship with the mother.
You mean like it's tumultuous?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, like a conflicting relationship with the mother. I would say that's probably number one.
Mm-hmm.
A lack of awareness on how to even build relationships with a kid because they may not have been shown that relationship. So the ones that come to mind didn't have dads either.
Okay.
Third one. I hate to say it this way. Mm-hmm. They don't care enough.
Okay. So you don't think it was money? That's always what I heard. Like, as far as I didn't have money to go down to court and fight, you know, and get an attorney and all of that stuff.
I'll add that, but in the inverse, or whatever the word is, I'll add that to say that pissed them off that they were put on child support.
Oh, well, yeah. Like, that's always been, which I don't completely get. I hate having conversations about child support because then I have to admit that I never, ever put mine on. Mm. And I did that intentionally because I'm prideful.
Mm. Self-awareness again.
Mm-hmm. I was just like, listen, no one has to tell me when I wake up in the morning to take care of my children. And I wish I would force you to.
Mm.
So if you choose not to do it, I will make sure that they get everything that they need without you.
Right.
And that was pride. I get it. Would I recommend that? Probably not. Because
in hindsight.
No, I think my situation was a bit different, but I will say, like, that's not what people should do. Yeah. Like, pride shouldn't play a part in any of it. But I also do believe that bringing the government into a lot of those types of decisions can make things more difficult.
So I'll add pride to my list for various reasons. Like, as I look back over some of the conversations as to why certain things didn't happen.
Yeah.
In the moment, it's like, oh, that's jacked up.
Mm-hmm.
Fast forward to 2025, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that was small.
Yeah. He probably didn't want to have to deal with her and, you know, all of those things. But it's just like, no matter what the situation is, even though you and I are discussing all of these nuances, and some of them are legitimate, some of them are not, but whatever the situation is, the outcome still remains the same. The home is a fatherless home.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a single mom home, but she's doing what she stayed.
So, let me ask you your thoughts on this. I don't know how much attention I don't know great detail, but okay. I think I've heard enough. I've heard the argument that Nick Cannon and Cam Newton are creating broken homes because there's no way they can be present in all the kids' homes, I guess, at the same time, or I don't know what their arrangements are, but I don't know them.
Yes.
But what's are those women by definition single mothers?
Come on now, Brandon. Of course they are. Are they married?
Right. But I'm saying, okay, maybe that ain't the right question. Is the home, let me rephrase it then. Are they creating fatherless homes?
If you don't litter. I don't care about the money piece.
And that's the nuance.
Yeah, I think a lot of people get caught up in that piece.
Yeah.
I don't really care. We can make things quite simple when we just look at the facts for what they are. The facts are her marital status is single.
Mm-hmm.
The facts are he doesn't live in the home. She is a single mom. This is a fatherless home.
That's it.
That's it. And there's some rich ones and some poor ones. And there's some people that are, you know, you still sleeping with her, and some people who are not still sleeping with her. And there's some people who are dating other people, and maybe she's engaged to another dude. I mean, there's all types of situations, but the fact still remains that under this blanket of this definition, she is a single mom because she's single. And if he doesn't live in that home, it's a fatherless home. Period.
That's it. That's all.
It could all be so simple, but we'd rather make it hard.
That's all I got.
Let me ask you a question.
Oh, Lord. All right. I should have been prepared for this.
No, I didn't know I was going to ask this until we just got to this moment.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of how to word this in a way that can sound very diplomatic. How do you believe that if a woman gets remarried to another person that is not her children's father, that that should change the arrangement, financially or otherwise, with the father of the child.
I don't think it should.
Okay. And the reason why I say that is because I know that evening during cocktails and conversation, we were talking a lot about, you know, well, what if she gets remarried? And what if she does this? And what if she does that? And all of that could happen, and that's you know, that's true. If she no longer is single, then she's married, and she's no longer a single mom. And that relationship then that you have with the child should not change. It should still not be a fatherless home. And if she's remarried, there's a dad in the home or whatever, and you know, you're still around, you're co-parenting and everything, you know, it's running smoothly. But too often, I think that changes the dynamics of the way that a dad moves with those kids.
So.
Especially if he's still paying child support and the other guy has money.
So I think one of the dynamics with that is. How you choose.
We ain't even talk about that.
So my friends laugh at me a lot of times because in dating, if you date a woman with children, let's say she has two. In my head, I will say I'm going to date three people. I have to date her.
Yep.
Her two kids. Then let's just say it's one dad. That's four people. And so I'm always doing the math. And so I'll say, like, that's too many people. I don't have the capacity.
Absolutely.
That's a lot.
People got on me because as a single mom of three children, I made a decision I was not dating a guy with kids. And they're like, how in the world are you going to say
that's your preference?
You're not going to date a guy with kids and you got three? I'm like, I absolutely will not.
Yeah.
And I won't. And I didn't. And it worked out. But I think you're absolutely right. People need to count the cost. The Bible always talks about counting the cost, counting the cost. And people need to count the cost of dating people with children. Personal responsibility that we didn't talk about. Do you find yourself, being honest, do you find yourself considering these single moms and the choices that they made with the father and him leaving and doing whatever he did, her responsibility, like her, you know, like, man, you should have chose better.
Ooh.
It's
nuanced again. We are all different people in different seasons of life. So I don't think that's fair for me to say to anybody, you should have chose better. Because while I may not have biological children, there's some spaces and areas I could have made some better decisions. So that's not fair for me to say to anybody.
If I had a clap track, I would click it. I would click it and be like, absolutely.
Gabe gonna put it on.
Cue the clap track.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I think a lot of times that piece of it also exists. There's a judgment that occurs with these mothers that, well, had you just done blah, 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 or hadn't done blah, 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 then you wouldn't be here. So, you know, you got to do X, Y, and Z. And so, you know, whatever.
And as somebody who is very, I think I don't know if I'm the most self-aware. I'm the most self-aware I've ever been in this life, and doing the whole therapy thing and all that.
Mm-hmm.
You just, that's not fair.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. We all gonna have to put up with something.
Of course. And if not by the grace of God, go I.
Yep.
So it's just like, you know, a lot of people, one of the things that I talk a lot about is, you know, me, I got married very young and I didn't know that he was who he was. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are like, oh, you didn't see the red flags. I'm like, I knew this nigga since I was in eighth grade.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know this was going to happen. I didn't know that that's who
And we
he
weren't
was.
Talking about red flags back then. We just talking about
Not
who he liked.
Not at all. Yeah, not at all. Like he body slammed me in the snow. Like, it wasn't, yeah. you know, I didn't realize that he was dealing with all of that.
Yeah.
And, yeah. but a lot of people later, you know, they were very judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And felt like I deserved everything that I went through because I should have chose better. And, you know, it was a really tough time
yeah.
for me. And that's why I make sure for every single mom that's out here doing anything, I truly have the mindset that she is doing the absolute best that she can with the time, with the resources, the capacity, the knowledge that she has at that time.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what the situation is. And I just give her kudos for staying when other people left.
I think that's a great place to wrap it up. Because I was about to be like, what's your parting words for
that? Would
that,
be,
that was it.
That's my parting words.
That was it. And so this was very... exciting, invigorating. This was a lot of things.
Well, good. Extremely thank you for dope. Having me.
No, thank you for coming.
I appreciate
like,
it.
You dropped some gems, though, in a lot of different spaces. Like, even for the mothers that are thinking about launching out and going back to school or starting a business, I think it was a lot to be learned. And as well as the encouragement to move forward with whatever those ideas and stuff things are. So
thank you.
That's your camera. Tell the people where they can find you if they want to. Hey, listen, if do you put the baby on Instagram too?
I do.
Listen, we are all watching Kendrick grow up in real time. Like, you have to follow her. Like, Kendrick is a star.
He is a little cutie patootie.
He is a star.
He is.
Like, yeah, you got to follow her just to check
Thank
Kendrick
you.
Out.
He's
yeah.
so funny. So my Instagram is socially_chic, C-H-I-C.
Yep. Mr. Dreams Academy on all social media outlets. Thank you for joining us. Another episode of Raising Kings. Hey, listen, going forward too, we want to start taking questions and ending these show with a question. So email me at brandon@dreamsacademy.life so that we can start having even deeper conversations and reaching the audience and, you know, just lending our thoughts and helping everybody journey on this life as we are doing. So till next episode, peace. Yeah.